It's Wednesday, November 3rd, 2010. This is Wendy Erickson. I'm a reference librarian at the Parchment Community Library. And today, we're taking the oral history of Pam and Bruce Blakeman, B-L-A-K-E-M-A-N. If you would give me your full names, please. Go ahead, Pam. What's your full name?
Paula.
Paula Blakeman?
Blakeman.
Yeah. And what was your maiden name?
Morozek.
How do you spell that?
M-R-O-Z-E-K.
Okay. When and where were you born?
I was born in Detroit, Michigan, July 22nd, 1943.
And where do you live today?
Holland.
In Holland. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what is your personal connection to the Parchment area?
As a little child, I lived here for about from second grade until sixth grade.
And what years would those have been?
Oh, dear.
Second grade.
48 to 54.
Okay. Bruce pipes in. Okay. Okay. And do you have children?
Yes, I do. Okay. Two girls, grown girls.
What are their names?
First name and last name?
Just first name.
Jennifer and Tracy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Bruce, what is your full name?
Bruce Blakeman.
All right. And when and where were you born?
Kalamazoo, Michigan, November 27, 1941.
And where do you live today?
Holland.
All right. And what's your personal connection to the Parchment area?
I started work here in 1963, 3 days after I graduated from Albion College. And I was fortunate enough to work for KVP Sutherland and successor companies for 40-some years, retiring in December of 2003.
Okay. December of 2003. The mill closed in 2000.
I was not affiliated with the manufacturing mill when it closed down. I was one of the individuals, if you know the history of the paper mill and parchment, in 1990, the converting plant to the west of the mill started. That was part of James River, as was Mill 1 and Mill 2.
Mm-hmm.
James River sold Mill 1 and Mill 2 to Crown Vantage. The paper mill, the converting plant out back, remained part of James River until such time as it was merged with Fort Howard and became Fort James, and then it was purchased by Georgia Pacific in, I believe it was 1996.
Okay.
So the continuity of people, some of us started at KVP Sutherland and continued and had continuous employment until our retirement from the converting plant out back, starting as the Epic plant it's still going now.
It is.
So, yeah. I was the last individual to retire from continuous employment, starting with the KVP Sutherland plant in 1963.
Okay.
The last employee that had any history with KVP Sutherland.
Sure.
There are some that might match that time that started out with Sutherland in 1963, but I'm not aware of any.
Okay. Pam, since you lived here, how did you come to settle here as a child?
My father moved from Chicago.
Okay.
And to work at Ingersoll Steel, which was downtown and on
Pitcher Street.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And he was one of the few people that didn't work at the mill.
I see.
Yes, which was a little different because most of my friends' parents worked at the mill.
So you went to school here?
Went to school here. Mm-hmm. Down
elementary school.
Yes, at the school that I believe now is the middle school.
That's right.
And that was the elementary.
On Riverview. That's right. Did you have a favorite subject in school?
Recess.
Recess, no. Probably science. Yeah.
Yes. Science.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. Because you went on to be a nurse, you told me.
I did.
Me. You did.
I did. Yes, I did.
And where did you work?
As Borges.
At Borges?
Borges.
How
operating
long?
Room.
Operating room.
Mm-hmm. Well, Borges and Bronson.
Okay.
Yes. Bronson for 18 years and Borges for probably 18 more.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Where did you live in Parchment? Do you remember the house number?
I do. 603 Glendale Boulevard.
Glendale.
Up at the top of the hill.
Okay. That couldn't have been a company house then.
No, no.
A KVP company house.
It was not. No, because we didn't work for KVP. So.
Sure, sure.
But I knew a lot of my little friends. I mean, I at the time, as a little child, you don't know that it's a company house. But
right.
Now that I think about it, I think that I had a lot of friends that did have live in company houses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And where'd you move after sixth grade?
We moved to Climax.
Oh, I see. Your dad got transferred.
My dad bought he bought a farm.
Oh, he did.
Yes, he did. He always wanted a farm, and he bought a farm in Climax, and we moved to Climax.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you go, and you went to school out there,
mm-hmm.
and then did you go away from home from Climax, like after you went to college from there?
Yeah, Michigan State and then Nazareth
sure.
for nursing school.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Honey, if I may, I'd like you to contribute your comments about Kindleberger Park and Belle Isles and all of the things you and this foam on the river, the things you used to experience when you were growing up.
Go right ahead.
Oh, well, yeah, I was saying to the other day we were talking about the environmental things, you know, now that are so important in our lives. And and of course this would probably contribute. These are my little friends that did, I think, have company houses that lived near the river, along the river, behind the mill.
Okay.
And where my mother would always tell us not to go. And, of course, we rode our bikes everywhere in Parchment.
Sure.
There was nothing ever to be afraid of. I mean, I think now of how we protect our children. And back then it was just, you just went merrily.
Yeah.
And we would go down to our little friend's house. We'd tell my mother maybe we were doing something else, and we would gather a few of us, and we would go to our little friends that lived along the river that was thick with foam and white to the point that you almost thought you could walk across it. It was so contaminated.
The effluence from the mill.
Everything from the mill. And we would we would get our sticks. We'd all pick up sticks, and we would be poking at that foam and taking it out of the river and piling it up. And it was. And it smelled, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And we'd be down there, and we'd come home, and my mother would say, have you been? Of course, we'd be all wet, you know, and she and foamy and smelling like the river. And she would say, have you been down to the river?
Right.
And we'd say, oh, no. You know. And it was very interesting. And those little friends of mine, I'm sure, had those houses, and we loved it. It was great play.
Oh, that's an interesting take on the mill.
Kindleberger.
Yeah.
And the park, of course. That was because we were only one road, you know, Glendale's one road off of Park Avenue, where the park is. So we were right there at the park, and spent hours and hours.
Playground equipment
in the
there.
Park.
Not even
playground equipment. No. No, just playing with the kids.
Because it was so huge. It's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And there would be gangs of us that all lived at the top of the hill, and we would spend days. I mean, in the summertime, it was real interesting because we would go out in the morning and say, well, we're going to the park, and we would just get on our bikes, and we would go to the park. Nobody to check on us.
Mm-hmm.
We would be home at noon.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the summer, of course, if there was a polio scare, because that was
in the early 50s,
we would have to come in, and everybody would take a rest after lunch.
Really?
That was one of the things that the doctors said to do.
Oh.
Everybody, so nobody would come out right away, and everybody would be in the house maybe an hour or two.
Yeah.
Then we would all congregate again until supper time.
Did you have any friends who contracted polio?
Mm-hmm.
You did.
I did. I did.
Yeah.
Bonnie Burbidge was her name.
I did too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She lived on Park Street.
Yes.
In fact, it was interesting because when we moved from Chicago, and we moved in second grade,
mm-hmm.
and Bonnie's seat was vacant.
Oh.
And I got her seat mm-hmm. in school. And they said, the teacher said to me, and I can't remember her name. I can't remember her name right now. But anyway, second grade. And she said, you'll sit in Bonnie's seat. Bonnie is sick. And when she comes back, you know, we'll get her another desk. But Bonnie never came back.
She didn't.
Never came back the whole year.
Really?
Yeah.
But she did.
Did she?
Oh,
eventually?
Yes, she did. I know. And as a little girl, I always thought, I don't think she exists. Because I, as a child, never knew of anybody that would be sick.
That long.
She was in Mary Freebed.
Did she come back with braces on?
She did. She did. She had, when she first started coming back, yeah. She did have braces. And then she ended up, walking well. It ended up to be my best friend, one of my best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. She had ended up also, I think, with some respiratory issues from the polio.
Yeah.
She was in an iron lung.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, those were some scary times.
Right.
Very scary.
She turned out to be a very successful realtor out in Arizona today.
So. Uh-huh. Yeah, Bonnie is right at this time, yeah. And her folks lived on Park Street, so they just lived a block away from us.
Yeah.
And we were very, very good friends.
Her dad was a doctor at Upjohn.
A doctorate, yep, at Upjohn.
Do you remember going to the community house for anything?
Oh, yeah, always. Girl Scouts and Brownies.
They met there?
Yes.
The Girl Scout and Brownie troops met there. That's the first I've heard.
There's an old picture in the Gazette of her as a Brownie at the community center.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And they also had big parties there.
Oh, yes.
Was big, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And Christmas. Mm-hmm. And
oh, yes. We often had parties and...
That
was a big deal.
That was a very big deal here.
Oh, it was very fun.
Certainly was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To a certain degree, her family was one of the minorities in the city of Parchment since they attended the Catholic Church.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, did you go to St. Ambrose?
No.
Or what was the Catholic Church?
It was St. Augustine downtown.
St. Ambrose did not exist. That's right.
Mm-hmm. My brother and I both did our first communions and confirmation.
And so you got on the bus? Did the bus come out here and get you?
No.
What did you do?
No, our folks would take it. I mean, we didn't go to school there. We just went to church there.
You went to church there.
But we were a little different because we were Catholic, mm-hmm. and everybody went to the Methodist church.
That's right.
My little friends would say, well, we don't ever see you at church. And that was kind of that was a little different for us.
Yes.
And we were outsiders because we moved from Chicago.
That's true, too. So you had a couple things going there that were...
We did.
You were aware of all the time.
We did.
Yeah.
And can I tell the story? One of the things that my folks were told when we first moved.
All right.
Because they drank.
Oh.
Alcohol.
Sure.
It was in the house. Don't give the impression.
Oh, yeah. They weren't alcoholics or anything. I mean,
please feel free to talk. I was raised Catholic. I had 12 years of Catholic school. So I know pretty much what you're talking about.
But when we moved to the rather Dutch community.
Yeah.
Somebody came to my dad and said, do you know that Jake Kindleberger has people that go through your trash to check and see if you have alcohol bottles in your trash? And we were told that when we first moved, and we never knew whether it was true or not.
Oh, so that was hearsay when you heard it.
We never knew, you didn't have absolute
positive witness, but you had heard that.
If anybody ever went through our trash.
He was very strict.
But we were told that, and so I don't know if my father thought, if we do drink, empty a bottle of whiskey or vodka or whatever, gin, which my father did, maybe he took it to work and disposed of it at Ingersoll. I don't know if we put them in the trash or not, because I wasn't privy to that.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So that was some of the things that we were told when we first moved
when you
here.
Got here.
That we needed to
be aware of. We just had to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to... Oh, go ahead, Bruce.
Belials.
Oh, yeah.
That we spent Belle Isle's a lot of time at Belle, store.
Belle Isle's was, we often, because we rode our bikes to school, and we could stop at Belle Isle's and buy things on our way home. We always had a couple cents in our pocket, and we could buy candy or stop whatever before we rode our bikes up the hill.
I interviewed Bob last week.
Oh, he's a great guy.
It's not available yet on the website, but it will be shortly.
Wonderful.
It was
person.
A fabulous experience, yes. And his name has come up on several of the oral histories I've taken. Everybody knew him
Loved.
And went to the store. Yeah.
Yes, that's wonderful. A friendly, wonderful
yes.
store.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and you think about it, this day and age, way at the top of Glendale Boulevard, to have a little kid ride their bikes down to Riverview, which
That's
is a
right.
busy road.
Yeah.
We crossed the mm-hmm. road, rode our bikes to school,
mm-hmm.
or just rode down to go to Belle Isle's in the summer.
Right.
And you felt safe of mm-hmm. letting your little kid do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is right. so changed now.
Yeah. Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
It has. Yep. If we can... We'll move over to Bruce for a little while here with his KVP, employment history. Bruce, mm-hmm. what was your first job at the mill?
I started out at the last employee hired under what they then called the staff assistance program, which meant you had an opportunity or you were scheduled the opportunity to work in all facets of the mill. From the scheduling department to supervision to industrial relations, wherever they wanted you. As it turned out, you kind of became a vacation fill-in while you were going through this staff assistance mm-hmm. program. I hired in 3 days after I graduated from Albion College. I started working here at the mill, and I interviewed with a chap by the name of Joe Pavanka, whose name I'm sure has come up.
It has.
And my first, the person that past my employment, you might say, was Frank Southon at the time.
Can you spell his last name?
Southon, Southon.
Thank you.
His father was president of the company, I believe, shortly after Kindleberger resigned the presidency. Frank was just a great guy to work for. I started out in, let's have to stop and think, I started out, just like I said, on the staff assistance program, just doing various assignments that I might be given. My first real job was in the scheduling department, for scheduling both Plant 1 and Plant 2, which would be the basement of the Glendale building, or the first floor of the Glendale building. From there, I went to 11 to 7 supervisor down at Mill 1 when the parchment machines were running and when the printing operations were down in Mill 1. We had mm-hmm. what was called the parchment presses were down at Mill 1. And the patty machine, patty line, not the patty machine, but the patty line where we made the patty paper. Anybody that's worked the parchment knows.
The patty line.
Yes.
I see. I've not heard that.
Okay. I'll come back to that in just a minute.
Sure.
From there, I went up to Mill 2 in the scheduling department, and from there, I became superintendent of Plant 2 converting, and then I became the manager of all the converting operations at Plant 2, which meant the print shops, the wax production, and the bond finishing room. Irene Evans, the lady you mentioned earlier, worked for me in Plant 2.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I had an opportunity after prior to the merger with Patterson Paper Company, Patterson Parchment in Delaware. I worked for 2 years as the industrial relations manager under Burnell Long. From there, I went out to, no, I got this backwards. I was given the job by Andy Muhaw as industrial relations manager for Plant 11 on the east side, which is now vacant and belongs to L.C. Howard. It's a warehouse for L.C. Howard on East Michigan Avenue. From there, I came back to Plant 3, the one-story building across from the Island Avenue office, and I was industrial relations manager for the parchment operation. And that job, probably the best day of my life after my marriage and the birth of my two daughters, was when Frank Summers told me that I was being relieved of the job as industrial relations manager.
Why?
Oh, I did not like the fact that job entailed firing people. To me, that was capital punishment. And I thought we had a good working relationship with the union, but every now and then things came up where you had to fire people. And
sure.
You had to do your job, and it meant the end of some friendships and some animosities that may still exist to
really?
This day.
Really? Okay.
Uh, But we got over that.
So were you salaried most of the time?
I was salaried every day that
you
I
were worked. Salaried, right. Never in the union.
No.
You were
no,
salaried.
Right.
Okay.
And that's an interesting story. When I started out, I was on an hourly basis. And I worked so much overtime that my salary was, my income was quite good. And I remember the day that Frank called me into his office, I'm talking about Salvin, and told me that I was getting promoted and I was getting a raise and I was going to be put on monthly salary. And it took me two paychecks to figure out I took a severe cut in pay before I...
Really? You know, a monthly salary?
All of my overtime hours were excluded.
Oh!
But we got by.
Mm-hmm.
As I said earlier, I started out when it was KVP Sutherland. And some of the things I remember about the operations here in the city of Parchment was the cafeteria in Plant 3, which again is the one-story building immediately to the west of the Island Avenue office, where we had this full-blown cafeteria. When I got there, I think it was being managed by Kalamazoo Catering, but you could go there and it was a regular cafeteria. They
mm-hmm.
had hot meals and it was a good place to interact with your fellow employees. The things I remember about the city of Parchment, if you will, when I started out, Aaron Stoppelberg, who was the superintendent of the print shop, and Don Motzinger, who was one of our graphics specialists, we would go to lunch at a little restaurant that now where the Parchment, there's a restaurant on one half and a Parchment department store on the other half, and now it's a lawyer's office, I think, the whole first floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just did it, didn't I? and then from there we switched to Belle Isles, and like... Pam, my wife says, Belle Isles was a great place. You just can't say enough good things about Bob Belle Isle and the
yeah.
ladies that work behind the counter.
Yeah.
The second best chili in the world came across the counter at Belle Isles. That was pretty much my lunch, a hamburger and a chili every day. But Bob was just so easy to talk to, and his love for the community and
yeah.
his interaction with local athletes like Mike Squires, who turned out to, he played professional ball and then became an umpire.
Oh.
And his Little League involvement and his knowledge of Derek Jeter growing up, it was fascinating to talk to Bob about that. Very, very personable. He knew my parents, he knew my mom's family when they lived in Comstock. And he talks about growing up with my Uncle Carl and my
oh.
Uncle John. They lived on the river in Comstock way back when. And it was
What were your parents' names?
My mother's maiden name was Lamboy. Her dad founded the Lamboy Label Company on Portage Road and then became a Buccalo, I think it was. And then it was Kalamazoo Barbecue or whatever.
Oh. What
right
were their
on,
first names?
Jenny and Carl Lamboy.
Okay. Okay.
And he knew Jake Kindleberger, and we've heard stories about the yellow kid.
Sure.
But Grandpa wasn't personally involved in it. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a rather successful businessman here in Kalamazoo,
mm-hmm.
Exchange Club and that sort of thing. My father's name was Bernard Blakeman, and he had a funeral home. They had a funeral home here in Kalamazoo until about 43 through 48, probably,
mm-hmm.
something like that, when we moved to Pawpaw.
What was day-to-day life at the mill like?
I think one of the biggest memories I have was the feeling of family. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's something that Uncle Jake pretty much started. You cared for people. You really did.
Yeah.
And it was kind of hard to be a hard nose because you knew everybody was really trying.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we had some good times. We had some things that I remember. At Plant 2, you probably have heard of the fabric softener Bounce from Procter & Gamble. Well, that was developed in our Plant 2 operations.
And it was?
Yes. We had started out with a tumble puffs by the Purex Corporation, and they sold the patent to Procter & Gamble. In 72 through 76, we were the sole producers of the national distribution of Bounce fabric softener.
I had not heard that.
In 1976, the operation was moved by Procter & Gamble to a plant in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
I see.
That probably, with the coating operation and with the rewinding operation and the packing operation, that probably employed about 30 people in our Plant 2 operations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the fonder memories I have of that was one Christmas Eve, the big storage tank wax in the wax farm over associated with Plant 2, a tank car full of the fabric softener material, the the wax storage tank broke, sprung a leak, and we had softener in the tunnels. And I remember Christmas Eve with Dick Aukerman and a couple of other people down there shoveling softener out of the tunnels before it solidified.
What was the consistency of it?
Oh, it was like liquid soap.
Oh, but
you leave it long enough and it would harden like wax, and you could break it up. But it was an awkward way to spend Christmas Eve. And that brings back good memories again. Nice to say,
sure.
Dick Aukerman and another young man by the name of Harold Peak were both supervisors for me, and probably two of the most natural born leaders I've ever experienced too. And that's the type of thing you had. You worked for some real jerks, but you don't remember them nearly as well as the people that stood out.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of the people that you'll interview that had an opportunity to work with or for either Harold or Dick Aukerman will attest to the fact that they were unusually talented people.
Mm. So. Okay. Okay. But you didn't work a swing shift.
I started when I first got into supervision after the staff assistance program, I worked 11 to 7. For about 2 years probably down at Milwaukee.
Okay.
And then I went on days, and I've been on days ever since.
Sure.
I had worked days ever since. Yeah.
So the mergers that you had mentioned earlier that the plant went through, were these seamless transitions or kind of bumpy?
At my level, they were relatively seamless.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing, going way back to Brown Company, before then, KVP Sutherland and all of the Canadian operations and the satellite plants that we had all around the United States. And then with Brown Company began you've probably heard the story of Michel Sindona and some of his illegal financial troubles. In Brown Company, Sindona, just as I understand it, to start raising money, started selling off Brown Company assets, which included the pulp mill at Espanola, mm-hmm. and some of our Appleford operations up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And then we began consolidating the satellite plants from Houston and Griffin, Georgia, and Devon, Pennsylvania, and whatnot, and brought all that back to Kalamazoo. And with them came, again, some talented leadership that ran those plants and were given an opportunity to come back to the Parchment area. But we kind of eliminated our vast distribution system by eliminating those little satellite plants in those remote locations.
Did you do any traveling for the company?
Once I got in the position that I was, the logistics position, I did quite a bit of traveling, yes.
True.
Mainly corporate office functions, like when we became part of James River, there was a lot of travel out to, I have to stop and think. No, that's not really true. I didn't get my logistics position until after we became, James River took over American Can Company. And then there was a lot of travel involving the subsequent consolidation of converting operations. And it would be to Portland, Oregon, or to Stamford, Connecticut, where the heaviest activity was involved.
I see. Did you have, was it any part of your positions to work with any of the sales reps? Did you ever come into contact with any of those people?
Quite frequently. When we, in Mill 2, in our gravure printing operations, we were one of the first companies to come up with a composite can, which is the spiral wound. You get a can of oil now, it's maybe now in a plastic bottle, but when they switched from metal cans to composite, which is a combination of paper and foil and various... Our Mill 2 operation was one of the first companies in the United States to make this come up with this composite can. We didn't make the cans, but we printed the material that would go to tube makers, and they in turn would.
And it was for specifically for oil or those kinds of.
The oil was the primary one.
Okay.
And then it became frozen orange juices was another one. We did quite a bit of work with what was then Citrus Central down in Florida. Names like John Coolidge. Names like Tom Roy, those are the ones we dealt with mainly because they were involved in the packaging sales. Flexible. Fred Van Kuren was another one in meat and poultry sales, which we did a lot of print business out of the plant too.
So. Yeah. So, what kind of road stories have you got?
No road stories.
Oh. Come on. No, I guess road stories.
The only one that comes to mind consistently was in, I have to stop and think now, I think it was like the storm of 76, I think it was.
Yeah.
Ron Fleckenstein and I had gone, and the name Ron Fleckenstein, if you're sitting in any building in Parchment, you know who
yes.
Ron Fleckenstein
yes.
is.
Yes.
Great man. I enjoyed working for
and
him.
And went on to be the mayor for a while.
Yes, he was. And mm-hmm. There was one time that Ron had several goals in life. One was to be mayor of Parchment, which he became. One was to become the fire chief, which he became.
Oh.
And I kind of admired him because he was a man of goals and he achieved most of those that he set out for. And also had the opportunity to work with his daughter, Debbie. It was we interact somewhat at Christmas time now, just an awfully great family. That's about mm-hmm. the only way I can say it. And his son, John, worked with us over at the Epic plant when it first started out. But the road trip you're talking about, we had gone to a packaging machinery show in Philadelphia in the wintertime. And to get home, after several canceled flights, we found a flight into Detroit. We rented a car, shared the rental with two employees from Upjohn who couldn't get home because they'd canceled all the flights into Kalamazoo.
Oh.
We rented a car and got as far as Ann Arbor, and the highway department had closed the road.
Wow.
We went into Ann Arbor, made our way to the train station, and got a train ride to, well, hopefully Kalamazoo, but I had to get off at Battle Creek because we lived in Climax.
Uh-huh.
Got off the train, and I was escorted home by an Army tank plowing the road for a four-wheel drive vehicle that got me as far as, well, maybe eighth of a mile. Well, no, they got to the curve in front of our house, and that's all the further they could get. Because the snow was so deep, and they turned around, and the last 200 or 300 yards, I had to walk through snow that was up to my chest. So
yeah,
it's kind of a fun
great road trip story.
But as far as
wow.
as far as road trips, they were rather uneventful.
Yes,
the hustle and bustle of the airports was about the only no scary in-flight emergencies or anything
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
It was rather mundane.
No disasters on the road.
No disasters.
No disasters. Yeah. Okay. So how about like pranks in the mill? Goofing around?
No.
What?
There will be people that will tell stories about goofing around, but from... Well,
did
I'd
you
say,
have to keep a lid on any of that stuff, or what?
Well, I don't know if you actually intentionally kept a lid on it, but in 1972, we had an employee named Jerry Harris who was severely injured in a mill accident.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he lost his left foot, I believe it was,
okay.
in a baler accident in Plant 2. But that was kind of the trigger that kicked off our safety campaign.
Yes.
And at the time, Ken Kircher was a manager of Plant 11, I believe, at the time. And he was appointed to head the safety committee, and that became his full-time job. And it was very, very intensely applied throughout the mill.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got several of the coupons at home, the little rewards you
yes.
used to get for performing.
Yes. Did you say 72 or 73, Bruce?
I think it was 72. I could be. I think Jerry
okay.
lost his foot in 72 and the program kicked off in 73.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. About
yeah, that was a very big deal at the mill.
It was. And I remember Lyle Ulrich, who was manager of the shipping operation, another fantastic individual.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a tree planted at the Methodist Church. Or no, it's right here in the park someplace. I think we planted a tree in Lyle's memory.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And he passed away, yeah.
Oh.
Andy Mulo was mainly responsible. Andy and Marshall mm-hmm. Forsberg were primarily responsible for that. But where was I going with this? Lyle Ulrich and I were two of the instructors for the safety program. All of the supervisors had to work. We had to put them all through
yes.
through the training program, and that was really that became the focal point for
yeah.
most of our activities.
Yeah.
Fortunately, my departments at one point in time had reached better than 1 million man hours with no lost time accidents, which
yeah.
was
excellent.
It wasn't because of me; it was because we had so many people devoted to the.
Yeah.
To the concept of safety in the mill.
Yeah, because the mill, frankly, was kind of a dangerous place
oh,
to work.
Oh, absolutely.
These mills, they all were.
Yeah,
they all were.
And it's really interesting to see how industry responded, not just our plant, but how industry in general responded to safety techniques and safety equipment to help protect the work.
Did you guys do a lot of press release on this kind of stuff when you kicked off your... So that the whole paper mill industry knew you were doing this and they followed?
Not that I can recall. If it was done, it was done at a corporate level. And
okay.
I don't remember that. But it, from the multitude of magazines and whatnot that you've got back here and that I also have at home, there's constant references to weekly, monthly basis.
He's referring to the KVP log and the KVP philosopher that we have here in the local history room.
And then there was the, when it became Brown Company, we had the different papers under different names.
Weekly
publications.
That's right.
A lot of that was the responsibility of Barb Diggin. I think you know Barb. She works here at the...
Barb's doing an oral history next week.
Okay.
Yes, she is.
I worked with Barb, with Brunel Long in the Industrial Relations Department for
right.
a couple of years.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yes, and if I may just add a little note about Barb Diggin, she's still active, very active, in the Parchment community. Not only is she full-time at the First Community Federal Credit Union, she's the chairperson for the Parchment Wassailing festivities here. The first Wednesday in Parchment, we all party. And it's because of Barb. This is the sixth annual. So
she can have a, in 1976, when we had one of our, rather, was it 76? Yeah, I think it was 76, one of our prolonged strikes. Barb was one of our cheerleaders. And we have we have several pictures of her cheerleading the strike, if you
is
will.
That right?
she's a great lady.
Yep, she's just full of energy, and she knows everybody.
Yes, she does. Yeah.
So did you play any sports at KVP?
Well, we had, no, not really. The legendary baseball teams were before my time, the Sutherland and the KVP. I worked with some people, and my name, their names escape me right now, but I worked with some of them after the heyday of the, you know, they were still employed there after the heyday of the team. If you have a chance to interview Louis Teal, who worked there until the mill closed down, he was a manager on the KVP, and I think also at one time the Sutherland baseball team, so he would have quite a history about the baseball
teams. Okay. Did I ask you, Pam, your parents' name? Your parents' names?
Yeah. Morozek. Irene and Tony Morozek.
Irene and Tony Morozek. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
How much longer we got?
Well, we're still talking here. go ahead, Bruce.
No, I just wanted to kind of bring you up to speed. There won't be too many people you interview that are going to be able to talk about their experiences with KVP Sutherland, with Brown Company, with James River, with Fort James, and with Georgia Pacific. I am one of those few people. In 1984-85, the concept was born of James River had grown so big that we had converting facilities in Portland, Oregon. We had converting facilities in Dayton, Ohio, Minerva, Ohio, Plant 11, Plant 1, Plant 2, H.P. Smith in Chicago. And someone got to thinking one day, why do we have all these converting operations when we can combine them into more centrally located? And thus the seeds of the EPIC plant were born. And the EPIC plant is the converting operation that now resides at 400 Island Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Ground was broken in 1990, and I think in the information I had, the initial production of the EPIC plant consisted of products and or machinery from 9 different James River facilities around the United States. If you look at the Island Avenue office now, stand in front of it and look up, you'll see a bas relief in cement of a globe with a banner across the globe that says World's Model Mill. That was erected in 1922 or 1923 when the Island Avenue office was built in conjunction with the expansion of Mill 2 paper machines. And as our motto for the origin of the EPIC plant, that globe with the banner World's Model Mill became the logo for the EPIC plant and remained the logo of the EPIC plant until Georgia Pacific saw fit to change the name from the EPIC plant to the Parchment Converting Operations.
Uh-huh.
So EPIC is a name that few of us know and even fewer remember. It's not used. I get a kick out of it because the Gazette always gets things screwed up when they talk about the evolution of things in parchment, because they keep wanting to get Plant 11 and the old Sutherland operations on Milam Road mixed up with the converting plant that's in Parchment. They keep talking about paper plates and paper cups, and there never was a paper plate or a paper cup made in the EPIC plant.
Sure.
Never was.
You're right, though. That does. I've interviewed some of the guys who still refer to that place as the Epic Plant, the Georgia Pacific Plant, as the Epic Plant. Right. Yeah. In fact, Barb Diggin keeps calling it that. She does. Yeah, she does.
But that's that you asked about travels. That involved a lot of travel because I was on the steering committee, if you will, to find the plant location, determine the plant location, and what equipment and what crewing and whatnot would go into the Epic Plant. So there was a lot of traveling. We visited places in Kentucky, in Indiana, various places where we could have located the plant, but we did a rather extensive distribution analysis, and actually the parchment location was the most centrally located. And then a gentleman by the name of Norm Ryan, who was vice president of operations of the what we referred to as the Sutherland Division at that time, was instrumental in getting some union acceptance of the Epic Plant, and that's one of the reasons that it was built here in Parkland. I wasn't in a position to know the inner details of that, but I just, you know, so someone with more executive exposure would be able to answer those questions than would I.
Okay. Yeah. All right. What are we missing? What have we missed? What else do you care to, either of you, memories of parchment Pam?
Well, I just think history. That there aren't too many people today that can, in this or any other environment, they can say they spent 40 years in the same company. And it was a good life. There were hard times. I mean, our marriage was stressed at times because I was always, Saturdays and Sundays, I was always at the mill.
You were?
Yeah, and plus if the mill, the days I wasn't at the mill, I also was in the National Guard for 30 years, so I was either at the mill or I was at the base for one reason or another.
Uh-huh.
But now we sit back and each month when the retirement checks come in, it's not so bad. It's not so bad.
Okay.
But it was like I said earlier, it was just a great place to work because there was kind of that sense of community.
Yeah.
Like at the reunion, some of the people that I shared supervisory responsibilities with, or people that worked for me, or people that I worked for. There was the bonds of brotherhood. I guess it sounds corny, but it was there, and it started to go away. It really did when management left the area and started when corporate management went to Richmond, Virginia.
Was that, and under whom?
That was about 1980 when James River took over.
Because
we gradually started losing our local autonomy, and we had. You know, Duncan McCallman and Andy Mule and whatnot had people bossing, supervising them that lived in, you know, Richmond or some places.
I see, sure.
So you couldn't relate to, you couldn't go to knock on somebody's office door and have immediate, you know, have direct involvement with what's going on. Because there were the people in Richmond or Atlanta.
Makes a difference, doesn't it?
Makes a big difference,
Yeah, it makes a difference. And for you, Pam, parchment's changed a lot since you were young.
Very much.
Yeah?
Very much, yeah.
What would you like people to remember most about parchment?
Oh, just that it was a great little place to be a kid, I guess. Yeah. Because I just know what it is being a child.
Just a great place
to... Yeah, it was very safe.
To grow up.
Yeah.
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 Nice place. Happy place.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the mill... is going to be demolished by the end of 2011.
Right.
So
right.
In about a year,
mm-hmm.
that'll be gone. And, you know, Parchment has plans for a development there. And
that's what we've heard.
We'll, the River Reach mm-hmm. project.
It changes. You have to keep up with what's going on.
You do. You do. But then all these buildings will be leveled.
It's hard to believe.
It is.
Yeah, that is something. You know, for 40-some years, driving up Riverview into Parchment, some of the things that you see changing. The community center's gone. Uncle Jake's house is now apartment buildings, and his front yard has been revamped with what was it, a dry cleaner and then a hot dog stand, and now Ty Kelly's. It was a savings and loan at one point in time. And then you look around, Checker Cab used to be a landmark. It's not there anymore. It burned down couple days ago.
It did.
In the where Pam's dad worked at the Ingersoll building on Pitcher Street, that was torn down for the parking lot for the board mill.
Sure.
Fuller Manufacturing was on the corner of Pitcher and Mazel. That's open field now. That's all gone.
So that's right.
In 40-some years, you see a lot of things change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As most things do, actually. We just,
yes.
When they're close to our hearts, it's rough. Yeah. It's rougher to see than other places.
Yeah, you just really have to go along with it. But yeah. I think parchment is still kind of the same.
Seems like this library,
nice little town.
I think there's been a lot of effort to maintain that. And this library, you know, has moved 5 times.
Oh, yeah.
This.
It was more the UPS store, or whatever you want to call it, next to Mrs. Bill Isles.
It's been all over town as leases ran out or the building wasn't sufficient or the collection grew.
Okay.
And very tenacious citizens here in this town wanted their library and made sure
we
had one. And so
I hope someday someone does an analysis of the death of the paper industry in Kalamazoo, though. When I started working at the mill, if memory serves, with all of before I started working here in Parchment, I worked 3 summers at the Allied Mills, the Bryant Mill, and the King Mill. And at one time, I believe there were 26 functioning Ford Rainier paper machines in
really?
The Kalamazoo
26?
Valley.
Yeah.
And there are none now. There are a couple of board machines running at the Sutherland. It used to be Sutherland. Now I think it's Graphic Packaging or maybe some other name by now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just the demise of the paper industry and why.
Well, I believe, if I can just chime in here, that there is something like that has been done at the Kalamazoo Valley Museum.
Oh, really? Okay.
There is a program that one of the curator down there does, and you know, his first name's Tom, and his last name escapes me right now.
His last name escapes me.
But I believe... I know you'd probably be interested, Bruce, and I can give you contact information, but this is good that this is on the recording for other people to hear, but that there is, and they have done displays and at least one program on this. And so there's a big effort in this town to track local history. And I want to say not only in Kalamazoo, but in Parchment, of course, we're tracking lots of local history, which is why we're taking oral histories.
You know, Willis Dunbar had done quite a job on the history of Kalamazoo. He wrote a couple of books, and then someone picked up after his passing, I think there have been a couple more Kalamazoo
There's a Kalamazoo
books.
Lost and Found, done by one of the women that works at the Western Michigan University Archives. Archives. Lynn Houghton has published a book on Kalamazoo.
Okay.
So I wanna thank you both so much for driving all the way from Holland.
Sounds like I'll be back with a truckload.
Bruce has lots of paraphernalia that he wants us to see, and we're glad to look at.
Oh, boy.
So I want to just thank you so much. Everybody's oral history has been a piece of the puzzle here.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And very, everybody is very unique, and I've heard lots of people say, I don't think I have anything to say, and they're always wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's got tremendous amounts of stuff to say. So, I want to thank you very much.
How much time do you have?